الإمام اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد
وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المبين: بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. ألف لام ميم. أحسب الناس أن يتركوا أن يقولوا آمنا وهم لا يفتنون. صلوات الله عليه
وسلم.
The first ayat of Surah An-Nahl, the chapter that Allah wanted believers to recite in Laylatul Qadr. And the message, obviously the importance of which is known by the fact that it's recommended to recite in Laylatul Qadr. It means that at least once a year Allah wants us to read this chapter and hear the message that is in this chapter. And here Allah starts off the chapter by saying, not just saying but also challenging and creating an environment of doubt in the claim of those who believe. And he says, "Ahasiba nasu." The word "hasiba," the way that it's used and the connotation that it's used in, when you see the meaning of it, it is challenging a person on the claim that he has. It's like calling someone out. He's saying, does man think that he can say, "I believe"? Does man think that he can say that he's a Muslim and get away with it? I mean, do you all really think that you can say that you are a Muslim and I believe and I am a Muslim and get away with it? That's the way Allah is asking the question. You think you're going to get away with saying, "I believe"? No, Allah says, no, you will be tried. Allah will try you. Allah will test you. Allah will put you through fitna and through sufferings. There will be that fitna that you will face if you claim to be a believer. Just like Allah has tested those who came before you. My friends, the idea that if you are a Muslim, you are going to be tested. If you claim to be a believer, you will be tested and tried. And that is what fitna is all about. Fitna, yaftanun, is from the word fitna. Fitna means to test something, to try something. And hence, Allah is saying that if you are a believer, you will be tried. You are going to go through the suffering. And when this fitna is going to come, now whether you pass the test or you don't pass the test, that is in your hand. But the fitna and the test is coming, because you claim to be a believer. Now, these 4 days that I'm here, what we are going to discuss about is that why do these sufferings and misfortunes and tests and trials come on believers? When we look at the trials we go through, when we look at the sufferings and misfortunes we go through, You see that not everything is from Allah. So what are the reasons which we go through these trials? If we understand the reasons, then we will have a better chance of passing those tests. If we don't even know what the reasons are, then we are being tested, tried, and we are going through those exams and we won't even know how to pass them. Because we don't even know the reason they are being given and the reason why we are going through these things. So this is something that we want to understand in these 4 days that I'm here. We'll try to go through these different reasons. And I'm going to go through 4 reasons by which we have these trials. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Now the trials that come, right, obviously Allah said that you are going to be tested. So it wouldn't be fair for Allah to test us in something that we don't even know what the test is. Meaning, for example, if you want to give a test in school, the teacher will let you know this is the format of the test. So you know that if you're being tested, then this is how you're going to be tested in. Right? Whether it's going to be, optional questions, multiple choice, fill in the blanks, how many this, how many that. If you know the format, then you know that, okay, this is the way the test is. If it's an open book, closed book test, whatever test it is, you should know what the format of the test is. And that's what Allah gives us in the Quran. He says, listen, I'm going to test you and I'm also going to give you the format of the test. This is how you will be tested. And He says in the Quran, وَلَنَبْلُوَنَّكُمْ بِشَيْءٍ مِنَ الْخَوْفِ وَالْجُوءِ وَنَقْسٍ مِنَ الْأَمْوَالِ وَالْأَنْفُسِ وَالثَّمَرَاتِ. He says that surely we will test you in these 5 things. We will test you in the way of fear. When you claim to be a Muslim and you say that I'm a mu'min, then we will put you through situations where you will see and feel and witness fear. And we will see if you are patient or not. If you are patient, then you will go through that test and you will pass that test of fear. And if you're not patient, then you will leave the fear, run away from it, and do what you need to do. Either fear or hunger. We are going to test you through hunger. We'll see. We're going to put you in a situation where you have to decide between Islam or job. And we will see. If you are patient, then you will rely on me and not leave my being for your job. We will test you in that. And that's how we're testing you. This is Allah giving you a simple format. And if you pass the test of fear and hunger, then we are going to try you with a little bit more. We're going to take away your job. You know, at first, you know, like for example, you're looking for halal work, halal haram. And if you choose halal work and you do get halal work, now Allah is going to take it away from you. He says, Naqsim minat amwal. We're going to take away your wealth, your means of income, your job, make you unemployed, then see what you do. And then after that, if you even pass that test, then we're going to try you by putting you in a situation where you're going to lose your life. You see? And after that situation, then we say that I'm going to test you by your children. We're going to take away your children and test you then. And so Allah now gives us these 5 ways that He's going to test us. And says that the test is coming in this way, so you know when the test is from me, it's going to be one of these 5 things. It's going to be in one of these 5 things, so you already know how Allah is going to test you. But other than this, what happens is that sometimes we see that we go through these difficulties, we go through these problems, and we see that our life, we have suffering in our lives, we lose our job, we lose our health, or accidents happen, you see misfortunes happen, and we need to see the reason why it happened. Why it happened? Is this Allah testing or is it something else? So the first reason we have for misfortunes coming, this reason was mentioned by Imam Ali alayhi salam. He mentions this reason in blackmail. We read blackmail, and this is the night to read blackmail. Before the program, we read blackmail. And Imam Ali mentions this in blackmail, the reason why suffering has come on you. The first reason that we must look at before we look at anything else. And every week Imam Ali wanted to us to read this reason, to know this reason. Why do we go through sufferings in life? So he says to Allah, Allahumma ghafir li adh-dhunub allati tunzilul bala. Allah, forgive me for those sins that I have done that bring down bala and misfortune in my life. Imam is saying that there are certain sins that bring down misfortune in a person's life. If you do those sins, then the natural result is that you are going to go through misfortunes in your life. You are going to go through difficulties in your life. Not all the sins. Some of the sins bring down misfortune in this world, in this life. There are certain sins that, yes, in the hereafter you will have to answer, or in the grave you will have to answer for them. Or even then, you know, if you answer for them in this dunya, but they don't bring down misfortune. But there are certain sins that do bring down misfortune. That Imam Ali is alluding to those sins. He's saying there are certain sins, and if you do those sins, they are going to bring down misfortune in your life. They're going to make your life miserable. Something happened. And this is what we need to find out, what those sins are. And since I'm here for 4 days, I'm not going to go through all the sins. Just we're going to go through 2 sins today, and that's it. Then we'll go to the other 3 reasons from tomorrow. If you want to know about the other sins, you can ask me later.
Sure.
Alright? So, 2 sins I'm going to discuss today that bring down misfortunes in your life. That bring down hardships and difficulties in your life and make your life miserable. And this is from one hadith that, again, Amir al-Mu'mineen, Imam Ali alayhi salam, had mentioned.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.
Here we see Imam Ali mentioned that there are 2 sins that bring down misfortunes in your life. Not only do they bring down misfortunes in your life, but they stop the risk of Allah, the provision and sustenance of Allah from reaching you. There are these 2 sins. The first sin that brings down misfortunes in your life is making fun of other believers. Those who make fun of other believers, those who joke about other believers, then their life will be miserable. They will have sufferings in their life and misfortunes in their life, and Allah is going to prevent His risk from reaching those people. Those who make fun of mu'mineen, those who make jokes about believers. This is something that is serious in Islam. Imam Ali mentions this as one of those 2 sins that break down misfortunes in someone's life. And first of all, we need to see why is that. To understand that, first we need to know what is the position of a mu'min. Who is a mu'min? Who is a believer? And we see that the Messenger of Allah had said that a mu'min is the example of Allah's power and might. Is the example of Allah's power and might. Now obviously when you look at that hadith, first of all, we start to think that Allah is the all-powerful. Allah is so powerful that nothing can be an obstacle in His way. And on the other hand, when we look at ourselves, we see that we are so weak that everything is an obstacle for whatever we want to do. And anytime you make an intention to do something, there are 100 obstacles. Because of this, because of that, we can't do it. Meaning on one hand, Allah is so powerful and we are so weak. Everything depends on Allah. And Allah is independent from everything. I mean nothing. And He is independent. And here we are, We are dependent on everything. We're dependent on our parents, we're dependent on the society, we're dependent on everything. So how is this mu'min who is so weak, who is so full of faults and defects, and who is completely dependent on others, how is he the example of Allah's power and might? How can he be the example of Allah's power? Just, I want you to know what this hadith means. Then you will appreciate the words of the Prophet. You see, all he said is that a mu'min is the example of Allah's might and power. And then we are like, Alhamdulillah. Sadaqa Rasulullah. So what does it mean? First, we need to know what it means so you understand the gravity and the depth of the statement. When you look at it, you'll see that this moment, who's so defective, so weak, so frail, how can he be the example of Allah and his power and his might? Two completely different things. So in order to understand that, Allah gave an example in the Quran, so that we understand this. Allah gave an example in the Quran and he said, listen, one of the examples he gives of his might and power was for the people of Saleh, Prophet Saleh. And he gave the example that, listen, I am making a camel out of a mountain. He made a she-camel out of a mountain. The she-camel came from the mountain, from the stones. Everyone saw a she-camel coming out. And Allah used that as a miracle to prove his existence and say that this is my power, this is my might. I can make a camel come out of a mountain. People saw that, they accepted the power of Allah. And Allah used that as an example to prove to the people how powerful Allah is. Imagine that, he's making a camel come out of a mountain. See, it didn't come out of a hole in the mountain, it came out of the mountain, it was made from the mountain. It was made from the mountain, it came out of there, people saw it, they said, how can you make a camel out of a mountain? You see, you understand the example? Allah is giving this as the example of his might and power, that he has made a camel come out of a mountain. So if we can understand how powerful Allah is, that he can make a camel come out of a mountain, then we will understand the saying of the Prophet. Allah is saying, now tell me, to him, Allah is saying that making a camel out of a mountain is a sign of Allah's power. Is that more powerful or making a mu'min out of a kafir? See, that kufr, that darkness that you were in, to get a person out of that darkness and make him a mu'min and come into the light, this is a sign of Allah's power. This is a stronger sign of Allah's power. Making a camel out of a mountain is easier, but making a believer out of a kafir, this is difficult. This is what Allah does. This is his guidance. And the Prophet said that this is the example of Allah's power. How he can make someone come out of so much ignorance and make him into a believer. This is a sign of Allah's power. That's why he's saying that he's an example of Allah's power. So those people who make fun of a mu'min, those people who make jokes about believers, because they left the darkness and they came into light, because they became a mu'min, they worship Allah, they obey Allah, people make jokes about, oh look at these people. This, whatever jokes they make. So for them in the hereafter, I'll just mention two things. One in the hereafter, one here. In the hereafter, what they are going to get in the hereafter is this. This was mentioned by the Prophet. And he said that those who make fun of believers, when they are raised in the hereafter, then Allah will tell the angels that show them the door of heaven. And they will be introduced to the door of heaven. The door of heaven will open. And they will be asked to go inside. seeing the door of heaven open, they will see heaven inside and they will be rushing towards it. And as they run towards it, they can feel heaven right there, and as they come near the door, it will be shut. And another door will be open. He says, no, that's the door you go to. So they will run over there. And by the time they reach there, that door will be shut. Then another door will be open. Say, no, go that way. And these people will run that way, thinking that that's the door of heaven. And this will go on happening until they give up. Until they give up, and then the angel will say, well, no, there's a door open there. Go through there. He said, no, no more. We won't go through here. In other words, they will be sent to hell, but Allah will first make a joke of them before they go to hell. He will humiliate them and disgrace them before they go to hell, that they become so frustrated that they will feel humiliated and disgraced before even they go to hell. This is how Allah will make a joke of them in the hereafter. And then in this dunya, it is said that those who make fun of believers, it said that those who make jokes about believers, then you see that he will get the most horrible death. He will have the most horrible death. And by most horrible death, there are different types of death that are mentioned in hadith that are bad. If someone dies burning, it is bad. If someone dies in the sea drowning, it is bad. If someone dies being eaten by a wild animal, it is bad. But the worst death, my brothers, is defined as this. The worst death that a person can have in this world is if one dies, is that death where there is no chance or there is no time for repentance. When you die in a way that there is no chance for repentance, then it means that you have died the most horrible death. And those who make fun of believers, they will die in this way. My friends, this is one sin. I just mentioned some of these things so you understand. Because this is a problem amongst believers. That they say that this has become so easy to make jokes of others and to make fun of others. When you see a believer, when you see someone who believes in Allah and His Messenger and the Imam, then this is someone, this is a person that Allah gives as His example. Imam Ali had said that if you cannot find Allah anywhere except in the heart of a believer, that mu'min is so important. And the heart of a woman is so important in the eyes of Allah. So this is one sin that brings down misery in your life. If you do this, then there is no way but to be miserable and you will face sufferings in your life. The second sin, my friends, that Imam Ali mentioned in this hadith. He had mentioned that the second sin, and this is very personal to Allah. This sin. Allah takes it personally when you are going to commit this sin. In fact, they said that if you do this sin, number two, then, Allah will not ignore this. I mean, He is going to punish you for this. There's no way out of it. And this second sin is known as disrespecting your parents. Those who disrespect their parents, then Allah takes it so personally that He doesn't want to forgive the people who do this sin. He does not want to ever ignore them. In fact, it is mentioned by Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq. It is mentioned by him that he said that there are three people that on the day of judgment, Allah will not speak to. He will not speak to them. Nor will He show any mercy on them. Nor is He going to give them the chance to wash away their sins. You see, in the hereafter, even those mu'mineen who have sins left over, Allah is going to at least send them to hell so that they can wash away their sins, get purged, so that they can go to heaven. many sins, Allah is not going to even afford them the opportunity to do that. I mean, they're in a bad situation. And he said that these three people are, first, those people who believe in destiny. Those who believe in taqdeer, that Allah has written everything. Those who say this, Allah is not going to speak to them, nor is He going to have any mercy on them, nor is He going to give them the chance to be purged in the hereafter. These are the first people. Second people are alcoholics. Drunkards and alcoholics. Those drink alcohol and are alcoholic and are drunk, of course Allah is not going to speak to them. Why? Because they never gave themselves the chance to listen to Allah. Even if Allah's word did come to them, they're too drunk to listen to it. So on the day of judgment, Allah is going to ignore them the same way they ignored Allah. He thinks he's going to say, alright, this is what you had in your life, go ahead. We ignore them. Second, the third is those who disrespect their parents. I mean, this is a sin that Allah equates to these two other sins. And here we see, this is the importance, the grievousness of this sin, of disrespecting your parents as such. That Allah, when He mentions the respect of parents and the relationship one has with his parents, He mentions it with His own tawheed, with His own worship. He says, وَقَضَى رَبُّكَ أَنْ لَا تَعْبُدُوا إِلَّا إِيَّا. Allah has decreed that you will not worship anyone but Him. وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ أَحْسَانًا. And you will be good to your parents. Meaning, after the worship of Allah, Allah mentions doing ihsan with your parents. And when the Imam was asked, what is the meaning of ihsan? Then the Imam said, ihsan means that whenever they need something, you should acquire it for them before they even ask you for it. Before they even ask you for it, you should acquire it for them. So what does that mean? It means that you are so close to them. You are so close to them that you, when you are so close, that you know what they need before they even ask you for it. That's how close you should be to your parents. That's how much close you should be to your parents. This is what ihsan bil walidain means. See, this is how Allah has made this relationship. Why? Because it has been mentioned that your parents are the means of your rizq. As long as they are there, Allah will give rizq to you and open the doors of your rizq and mercy. Those who look after their parents, Allah will open the door of His mercy to them. But if they shut the doors of their parents, then Allah will also close the door of their mercy, of His mercy. This is what happens. Nowadays, when we look at the way in which we deal with parents, no wonder our whole society is going through such horrible miseries and sufferings. Parents nowadays have become more of a burden. Especially when they get old. They get old, you see, when you look at your father and mother who are old, you're like, you know, you go to them in a nice way. Obviously those people who are good will go to them in a nice way and say, you know, it's better if you live in an old people's home. There are nurses who can look after you. There are nurses who can look after you. They'll take care of you. You know, and they'll find any way they can to drive them out. To drive them out of their home. But what they don't understand is that they are not driving away their parents. They are driving away the mercy of Allah. When they leave your house, then the mercy of Allah, His rahmat, His rizq is leaving your house. This is what they don't understand. And Allah has said for believers, they know how to do ihsan with their parents. They work hard with them. Now you see, how much do we have to do for the parents? Really, a lot of times it seems uneven. You know, I mean, they're in charge of us until we're 18. Now when they get old, so we take care of them. And sometimes it happens when they live a long life, and we have to take care of them for a long while. I mean, that 18 years finished, you know, we are adults, we're off. But to them, you know, for example, if they become old, it might be 20, 30, 40 years that we have to take care of them. Sometimes it seems, you know, uneven. And a person, his mother was invalid. He used to take care of his mother. You know, he used to take care of his mother. So he went there, you know, he went to the Prophet. And he said that, Ya Rasulullah, my mother is invalid. I take care of her. You know? She cannot do anything, so I have to take her on my back wherever she wants to go. You know, he used to carry her on her back. Anywhere she wants to go, to the market, to this, to that, to the masjid, he would take her on her back, on his own back. He says that I feed her with my own hands. I clean her with my own hands. And I've been doing this all my life. Okay, good. So what's the question? He said, the question is this. I have done this for so many years. More than what she has done for me. The only question I have is that, have I paid her back for what she has done for me? Have I done enough to pay her back for what she has done for me? When she took care of me all these years, have I done enough to take, you know, that I've done for them? Really? And before we import the answer, just imagine what he has done for her. You know, he carries her on his back everywhere she goes. We don't want to carry her, have her in the back seat of our car, let alone our back. Right? And here, we don't have to carry her on our back, you know, we just have to put her in the back seat. That also, we're not ready to do. I mean, just imagine this, what he's doing for us. He's carrying her on his back. He is feeding her, he is cleaning her, doing everything. This is his mother. And now he's asking that I've done it for more than she has done for me. She took care of me also, and I'm doing this because I owe her. But have I paid her back? Have I did enough to pay back for her right? The Prophet said no. He said no, but why? I have done more than she did. Now understand the reason, my friends, the Prophet gave. So you will understand that you can never pay her back for what she has done for you. The Prophet said that, listen, you, when she was raising you, when she was taking care of you, she knew that if you live long, her only wish was for you to live long. Because if you live, then her responsibility will be finished. So while taking care of you, she was always praying for your life. You, when you are taking care of her, you know that your responsibility will end when she will die. So in her eyes, your life is her dua, and in your eyes, her death is your dua. This is the reason. She knows that you want to live, but she's making dua also for you to live longer. But you know that when she dies, your responsibility is finished, and you can say, Alhamdulillah, now my responsibility is done. You see the difference? That's the reason. While taking care of you, she was making dua for you also. She was making dua for your long life. So that you live. So that you go on living. This is that love she had for you. This is that love she had for you. Yes, you take care of her and you love her also. But you know what? You know when she dies, it's the end of your job. This is the difference, my friends. And here we see that this is a sin. This is a sin. That Allah, if someone, He disrespects His parents, if someone wants to destroy his life, if someone wants to make his life miserable, if someone wants to make his life full of sufferings, if someone wants to be unsuccessful in anything he has to do in life, then the only thing you have to do is disrespect your parents. That's it. That's the secret. The minute you start disrespecting them, then you know that Allah is going to make you unsuccessful in anything you do in life. He's going to make your life full of sufferings. This is the easiest way of putting it, my friends. If you want to be successful in life, then the secret is to make them happy. Because the reason is because their duas is always accepted when they make dua for you. When your father and mother make dua for you, then their duas are accepted by Allah. When they make dua for you. That's the reason is, it has been mentioned by Imams, that whenever you see that your duas are not being done, that you're unsuccessful in something, go to them and ask them to make dua for you and it will be accepted. This is the secret. So now you see the two reasons Imam Ali gives. Understand this now. First he said, making fun of a mu'min. Second he said that, disrespecting the parents. These are two sins that bring down misery in this life. Now my friends understand, if we understood how important it is to respect a mu'min and respect your parents. If you understood the importance and the rank of a believer and the rank and status of your parents, now understand how Imam Ali, through his wisdom and eloquence, is trying to teach this ummah something so that they know something about ideology. Imam Ali is saying two sins bring down misery in your life. Making fun of a believer, a mu'min, and disrespecting your parents. So two things are important. A mu'min is important, and your parents are important. So when you understood the importance of a mu'min and your parents, now if anyone understood this hadith of Imam Ali, they will know who is more important. Is a mu'min more important, or is Amir al-Mu'mini more important? By teaching the respect of a mu'min, Imam Ali is trying to teach you, if the status of a mu'min is high, imagine the status of Amir al-Mu'minin. One who is the chief of the believers. What kind of respect you should give him, and how far you should abstain from making fun of him. You see that? And then when he spoke about parents, now understand, if your parents have such a status, then understand why the Prophet said, "Ana wa Ali abawayhi hadhihi al-ummah," that me and Ali are the parents of this ummah. Now understand the difference. If respecting the parents is so important, then the parents of the ummah, how much you should respect them. My friend, our parents gave birth to us in this life, in this dunya. And Ahlul Bayt gave life to us in the hereafter. Understand this. And from here you can understand the difference between them and our parents. It is a difference between the body and the soul. Tell me which is more important, the soul or the body? Our parents gave life to our body, Ahlul Bayt gave life to our soul. You see, this is the difference, my friends. And so if you understood that, imagine, if your parents are respected so much that you should respect them, imagine how much should the Imam be respected. How much more that the Imam should be respected. You see, this is the eloquence in the book of Imam. In teaching something, he wants us to understand something else. So that we can figure out what is ideology in Islam. This is the reason why when we look at Amir al-Mu'mineen, if you could not understand, if you don't respect your own parents, why would you respect Amir al-Mu'mineen? If you don't respect a mu'min, why would you respect your imam? This is the difference. And when you know the importance of who the imam is and who Ahlul Bayt are, then you would know that those who did ridicule them, and those who did make fun of them, what will be their position in the eyes of Allah? If Allah will humiliate those people who made fun of believers, what will He do to those people who make fun of a Amir al-Mu'mineen? If Allah is going to make people who disrespect their parents go through sufferings, then what about other men? What about them? My friends, this is why you see that when the day of Ashura, when Imam Hussein stood up for prayer, he stood up for prayer, he said, we're going to pray. Right? The army opposing Imam Hussein stood up, saw Imam Hussein praying, and they said, why are you praying? You think your prayer is accepted? You think your prayer is going to be accepted? They told Imam Hussein. They told Imam Hussein, your prayers will never be accepted. Your prayers will never be accepted. Imam Hussein is praying and they're making fun of him. This is my friends, those people. That's why you see those people who had honor, they stood up. Zuhair ibn Qayn stood up, Habib ibn Mata'i stood up and said, what, you think your prayers are accepted and the prayer of the grandson of the Prophet is not accepted? What kind of statement is that? You're making fun of him? Don't you understand that the prayer of the Prophet was stopped because of Hussein? Allah wanted to show you something and you haven't still understood that. And friends, this was the ridicule that Ahlul Bayt had to go through. What did they have to go through? You see that? You know, the ridicule they did on Imam Hussein to disrespect him on the day of Ashura, just hear it and then imagine it and then you see it for yourself. What Imam Hussein, what happened to Imam Hussein? When Imam Hussein was slaughtered and when his head was cut off and his body lay on the ground, the first thing that the people did is that they came to Imam Hussein. They pounced on him like hunters would pounce on prey. And they took whatever valuable they can find on the person of Imam Hussein. Someone came and wanted the ring of Imam Hussein, so they chopped off his hand. And someone came and ripped apart his clothes. And when nothing was left on his body, then they started to disfigure his body. Someone cut his nose, someone cut his ears. And this is the Imam. This is the Imam, this is the grandson of the Prophet. That they're doing this to. And you know, we can just imagine this and see how hard it is. Then when that wasn't enough, they made his head and they put his head on a spear and took it on a spear. And they danced with his head. You see, my friends, that head went from Karbala and Kufa, Kufa and Sham. They went with that head and they took that head to show the people. But you see, it was something else, that head also. Allah wanted it to be a sign. Allah wanted it to be a sign so that the people can see it as a sign. That head of Imam Hussein was reciting the Ayatul Quran. Someone who was in Kufa said, I was in my house, outside in my yard, and I saw above my wall that there were heads on spears that were being carried. And I saw that this one head, it was reciting the Quran. It was dead. It's on the spear, it's reciting the Quran. He said, I saw it reciting the Quran. I said, what is this? I looked up, I wanted to see who is this. And he went up and asked who this is, and they said, this is the grandson of the Prophet. This is the grandson of the Prophet. And he wondered why it is. But you know, it wasn't because Allah wanted it to be a show. It was because Allah wanted a distraction from those heads whose hijab were removed. From those heads and hijab were removed, so people do not look at those heads. He made Imam Hussein's head recite the Quran so that when they look up at him, they would not see the heads of Zainab ibn Umm Kulthum. But this head went from Kufa and Sham all the way to the court of Yazid, where it was put there. Where is it? Where it was put there, my friends. When you go hunting, then you bring back your trophy and put it on the wall. But the head of the grandson of the prophet was put on the wall of Yazid as a trophy. As a trophy it was put there. But now you hear this and tears are flowing down your ears. Now imagine what Sajjad, Imam Sajjad had to go through. That this is his own father whose head is a trophy in Yazid's court. Imam Sajjad is looking at the head of his father. Imagine what he is feeling. That this is the head of my father. And it's being paraded like a trophy. And they are laughing at it and ridiculing it. And Yazid is hitting it with a stick in his lips. Yazid is hitting the head of Imam Hussein with a stick when Imam Sajjad is in front of him and he's hitting the head in the lips and Imam Sajjad looks at those lips and it's the same lips that the Prophet used to kiss. Imam Sajjad, what can he do but cry tears of pain and agony? Imam Sajjad went through this pain of looking at the head of Imam Hussein and as a son he could not do anything. Imagine how hard was it. Salam be upon you, Imam Sajjad, who has gone through this pain for the sake of Islam. For the sake of Allah, you have gone through this pain. Ya Allah, Ya Ali, Ya Fatih al-Samawad, Ya Muhsin, Ya Nadim al-Hassan, Ya Hakim al-Hassan. O Allah, we ask you to give us the perfect and the right path, and to those who understand things. Hasten the ignorance of Imam, make us his helpful. Prophet, have one from the other. Ya Hussein.
Ya Hussein. Ya Hussein.